Well, it was about 50 weeks ago that I stood up here and talked about the hacker ethic. Now, I assume you all remember everything that I said 50 weeks ago. Okay, so last night I had to download the text of my sermon and review it myself. For those of you who didn't do your homework, who didn't listen to the audio this week or read the transcript, before I go on today, I think I need to define some of my terms. The title of my talk today is Hacktivism, Plausible Promise. Hacktivism. Well, first of all, let's talk about what a hacker is. Unfortunately, before we talk about what a hacker is, we have to work on defining what a hacker isn't. Hackers are not teenagers, or rather, they're not all teenagers. Hackers are not all boys. Hackers are not all nerds or geeks. And most importantly, hackers are not criminals. It's one of the greatest failings of the hacker community that they have failed to deobfuscate the term hacker or to come up with an appropriate alternative. A hacker is simply somebody who takes delight in exploration and understanding the world around them and reapplying that knowledge to the world. In our second, excuse me. A hacker is one who seeks meaning in that which surrounds her, the raw material, both physical and intellectual, to provide novel solutions to her problems, repurposing the stuff of everyday life to suit her needs, rather than simply treating those things as commodities to be consumed. Hacking is simply the process of applying ingenuity to practical problem solving and delighting in the process. In the 1950s, the first people to be called hackers were a group of model railroad enthusiasts at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology that made use of a mainframe computer near their clubhouse to control their train layout. Now, of course, the manufacturers of the computer meant this multi-million dollar piece of equipment to be used to solve intricate engineering problems, not to be a controller for an overdeveloped toy. But the members of the Tech Model Railroad Club at MIT saw this tool, saw its potential, and thought to repurpose it to their own needs. After all, it was just sitting there idle at night and on weekends, not serving any purpose. Now, this is perhaps a trivial example that plays into the image of hackers as people with great technical prowess that are content with frivolous diversions. This is a fair but superficial criticism of hacker culture, but there are other elements that naturally arise from this culture and this curiosity that tend to move the hacker's efforts away from the trivial. For a hacker, the currency of choice is knowledge. Knowledge is acquired, refined, and freely redistributed. That last point is curious. Redistributed. Why? Because the only way to demonstrate your superior knowledge of a subject is, well, to demonstrate it. The big problem with being an evil genius is that they can never keep their mouths shut. how many times has James Bond thwarted Ernst Stavros Blofeld because Blofeld insisted on bragging about his evil plans before killing 007? Hackers have the same weakness. They brag. Technological bragging is called demonstration. This bragging has two interesting effects. First, everybody learns what you know. The only way to show somebody your mastery of a topic is to fully disclose your understanding of that topic. The second effect is that people are liable to tell you what they think of the application of your knowledge. If you do something trivial, you will suffer the appropriate ridicule. If, on the other hand, you use your knowledge to accomplish something not only novel, but useful, praise will be yours. To quote Peter Parker, with great power comes great responsibility. How come that's the only thing we ever quote Spider-Man for? Of course, the internet only tends to amplify this effect, as it is easier to disseminate your knowledge through the internet, through websites, through Usenet, through wikis, and likewise, it makes it very easy for others to respond personally to what you're disseminating. We begin to see how we move from mere technical obsession to an ethic. Before long, the hacker will be repurposing the means around them towards social causes. Let me give you a quick example. This comes from the internet storyteller Clay Shirky. I borrowed the story of the Shinto temple from him, and I'll borrow one more example from his book, Here Comes Everybody. Mobile phone companies, some years ago, offered a service to allow people to send short text messages between phones. Typically, these messages are something like, I'm running late, I love you, pick up some milk on your way home, where are you? But what if I used my phone to tell, what if I lived under a repressive regime and used my phone to tell my friends that also opposed the government to show up in the main square of town in 1 hour eating an ice cream cone? Oh yes, and text all your other friends that feel the same way and tell them to show up. No banners, no slogans, just a vast mob of people that suddenly materialize in the main square of town eating ice cream. Of course, seeing as I live under a repressive regime, the mobile phone company is owned by the government. The government knows what I'm up to. So, the authorities are there and start arresting everybody who's sitting around eating ice cream. Of course, there are one or two people there who aren't eating ice cream with cameras, and they take photographs, and they post the photographs to their MySpace pages and to their LiveJournal pages on the internet. And suddenly, the government is in the unenviable situation of being caught arresting people for eating ice cream in public. So suddenly, I've taken state-controlled media and manipulated it to gain international attention for my cause. This happened about 2.5 years ago in Belarus. Text messaging was also pivotal to the success of the Orange Revolution in Ukraine. Of course, it should be noted, let me just backtrack a bit, that the struggle for democratization in Belarus goes on. This is what I mean when I use the word hacktivism in the title of my talk today. Repurposing the commodities that we are meant to consume into effective, meaningful tools. Use those tools in a collaborative way, and you might be able to change something. Ever since the introduction of the Prius, critics have faulted Toyota for not being more aggressive with their design. The critics say, hey, why can't I plug this thing into a clean source of electricity and therefore get even better mileage? Why indeed? Why not? Now, I don't know how to re-engineer my Prius so that I can plug it into a wall socket and charge the batteries from my house. But I bet somebody out there on the internet does. Somebody probably knows a lot about making DC charging circuits. Somebody probably knows a lot about the technology of lithium-ion batteries. Somebody can probably even take Toyota's own battery charging circuit, take it apart, figure out how it works, and help me repurpose it. Well, what if I create a space on the web so all of these people can get together and share their ideas? Well, it's been done. And there are what they call plug Priuses driving around now. In fact, one of the designs for a plug Prius was so robust and so well engineered by this sort of online collaboration that Toyota has essentially adopted it intact for a forthcoming version of the Prius to be released in Japan. I'm afraid we have to wait. We need the knowledge, we need the social pressure, and we need a community. With these factors in place, we can use our powers for good or for evil. What if my cause is nationalism instead of democracy? Or I am a muscle car enthusiast instead of being interested in clean energy? There are few things that are true about the world as a whole that aren't true on the internet. Rather, the internet simply acts as an amplifier. It facilitates. No longer do I need to own a car company with the managerial overhead and the giant factories to try a new innovative design. I can bring together engineering talent through direct collaboration with people all over the world, or even just in my own town. Clay Shirky says, without a plausible promise, all the technology in the world would be nothing more than all the technology in the world. The world is full of challenges and inequities. So why is the way of the hacker a promising model to address these issues? Is there any potential advantage over traditional approaches? Let's look at some of the tenets of hacker ethic. First and foremost is sharing. Sharing is vital to hackers. Foremost, they share knowledge. When you share knowledge, you have the advantage of the accumulated wisdom that has gone before. Hackers always do their work knowing that they stand on the shoulders of giants, or more precisely, hackers that have gone before. Hackers have a word for this. That word is open. Open is more or less a synonym for free. Not necessarily free as in gratis, but free as in libra. Hackers have a saying. It's free as in speech, not free as in beer. Proprietary information is an anathema to hackers. It causes people to waste valuable time solving problems that have already been dealt with. Intellectual property is highly respected among hackers. After all, it's what they do. But there is an expectation that intellectual property is to be shared. In return, any intellectual product that the hacker produces is to be shared in turn. Another common feature of hacker ethic is collaboration. Together we can do much cooler things. I do not know everything. Neither do you. But together, we understand more than the sum of our individual knowledge. As the members within a collaboration grow, the relationship between disparate pieces of knowledge multiplies more quickly. There are practical limits to growth, of course. If the group grows too large, then it resembles nothing more than a cacophonous mob. But tools we have through the internet make this sort of collaboration easier. Think about how hard it would be to coordinate 7 million people to write a document. Well, that's what Wikipedia is. 7 million collaborators that have come together to create a repository of knowledge. Another highly prized value within hacker communities is simplicity. Simplicity is highly valued. A tool should be as simple as possible to get the job done well. Unnecessary ornamentation is a waste of time. Usually, one well-designed, simple tool will be the best fit for any given problem. Good enough is usually good enough. Antony de Saint-Exupéry once said, "A designer knows he has achieved perfection when there is nothing, not when there is nothing left to add, but when there is nothing left to take away." Interestingly, simplicity is an excellent proxy for resource use. It is also true that simplicity is good insurance against failure. Curiosity. Curiosity, not only about ideas, but about the made world around us, is a hallmark of hackers. This curiosity is always driven by the question, how can I use this? And there are definitely extra points for answers that do not appear in the instruction manual. The hacker is freed from some of the constraints of our consumer culture. Michel de Certeau, in his book, The Practice of Everyday Life, explains how the consumer repurposes the consumable and reinterprets it in ways that the producer never intended. He says, "Let us make a perigue, or French for wig, in the economic system. Work with its machines, making use of its scraps. We can divert the time owed to the institution. We can make textual objects that signify in art and solidarities. We can play the game of free exchange, even if penalized by our bosses and colleagues when they are not willing to turn a blind eye on it. We can create networks of convenience and sleights of hand. We can exchange gifts, and in these ways can subvert the law that in the scientific factory, puts work in the service of the machine, and by a similar logic, progressively destroys the requirements of creation. And by simple logic and the obligation to give, I know of investigators experienced in this art of diversion, which in return to the ethical of pleasure and of invention with the scientific institution, realizing no profit, for profit is produced by work done in the factory, and often at a loss, they take something from the order of knowledge in order to inscribe artistic achievement on it and carve out in the graffiti of a debt of honor. This is the very heart of the hacker ethic, a subversion of the centralized cultural authority, recycling its products to suit one's needs. Products are not just to be consumed, then discarded, but remade to serve one's own reimagined ends. Repurposing and recycling are closely allied. Why reinvent when you can repurpose? This is not a pursuit that is without its detractors. I spoke earlier about the media's pejorative use of the word hacker. The stereotype of the evil hacker dies hard. But it seems even harder to grasp for some of that there is not something wrong with subverting the intended purposes of our consumer commodities. No user serviceable parts within. Warranty will be voided. Did you know that when you install a copy of Microsoft Office on your PC, you agree not to try to figure out how it works? Very few people read the end user license agreement. How does one practice hacktivism? Remember, a hacker is nothing more than one who delights in the solving of practical problems. Programmers are not the only hackers. Mechanics, chemists, lawyers, carpenters, linguists, artists of all types, anyone who approaches the world with the right mindset is a hacker. So, practice hacktivism. Liberate knowledge. Contribute to a wiki, not just Wikipedia, although that's a great place to start. How many people have looked up something on Wikipedia and said, "That's great, I didn't know that." But you know what? They got this detail wrong. Okay, did you correct it? There's also other wikis, Wikisource, which is a repository of public domain and freely available texts. The other night when I was doing some of the research for my talk, I was looking for a particular translation of the Tao Te Ching. I went to Wikisource and found that they have four different translations, three from known scholars on the topic, and then one that was done by the Wikisource community. It was not very poetic. It does not make a good reading. However, it was perhaps the most informative translation. In the right-hand column next to the English translation were the original Chinese characters, so that if I wished to refine the translation myself, had I known how to read Chinese, I could have done so. But more interestingly, people helped refine the translation who had no understanding of the Chinese, who perhaps had understanding of Chinese culture, or of Taoism, or of Lao Tzu, but couldn't read the Chinese. I highly recommend this translation. It's a fascinating read, even if it isn't very good poetry. How else can we be hacktivists? We can join organizations like Engineers Without Borders that takes on engineering challenges in other countries where resources are limited. We can use open source software, software that is produced by hackers and then freely distributed. Usually, in this case, free also means free as in beer. After you use open source software, you should write some. You've benefited from the work of others. You don't need to be a programmer to write software. There are many ways of changing a software product. Most open source software, such as OpenOffice, have developer communities around them. If you see some way that your piece of software doesn't perform in a way that you would like, or if you see a feature that you'd like to add, you don't necessarily need to know how to add that feature yourself, but if you go to the community and make a suggestion, more likely than not, within a couple of weeks, you'll see that feature back in the software. Reduce, reuse, recycle, and let me add one more, repurpose. Don't be constrained by what it tells you on the package your product is for. Use your imagination. There is an ever accelerating drive to consume. Technology is no exception. On average, we replace our PCs every 3 years, our cell phones every 18 months. I'm no exception to this. Ask yourself, am I doing anything with my new computer that I didn't do 3 years ago? Why is my new computer better than my old computer? Is it what I'm doing with my computer? Or is it somehow that software that I bought to run on it? Are there better choices? Woody Guthrie used to have the words, "This machine kills fascists," painted on his guitar. With some imagination, we could do the same with our PCs, or with whatever tool is your choice. If we exercise our curiosity, perhaps all the technology in the world will not just be all the technology in the world.